I apologize in advance. I'm not feeling particularly well. And in addition, I don't think these prokim that we're up to now are too interesting. So the combination of my not feeling too well and these not being particularly interesting prokim, I think it's really, you know, it's not going to be too exciting. So we'll just kind of read through them and see what happens as we go along. You know, when I say something's going to be good in advance, I say so. All right, why don't you take a look? There are some points here and there. Take a look at Perek Yudchet, Pasuk Aleph through Hey, which is where we're up to. It's kind of a continuation of what we were doing last time. Take a look at Yudchet Aleph through Hey, and why this time of the year we can already have any of you tell me if there's anything interesting here to discuss. Perek Yudchet, Pasuk Aleph through Hey. Oh, someone has something to say? Yaakov, go ahead.
I don't understand why Yonatan and David are like, why they have that relationship. Like, what provokes it? It's just like very weird in general, and I don't understand because like, what is Yonatan doing there? Like, why is he, you know, why is it like David's comments or?
Yeah, the story here seems to be about Yonatan and David, or the beginning of the story of Yonatan and David here at the beginning of Perek Chet. The Mishnah in Perkei Avos refers to this as Ava Sheinat Tluya B'Davar, meaning it seems to have no explanation. So Yaakov's question is confirmed to some extent by a certain interpretation of the Mishnah in Masechet Avot. Now let's just read through here briefly, and I think it is interesting to note the focus in the Psukim on the relationship between Yonatan and David. And maybe it's in contrast to something, and I want to explain what I mean by that. Pick it up in Yichud Aleph. Vayikach chalato ledaber el Shaul. So it was when David finished speaking to Shaul, end of something. Kichalato ledaber el Shaul. And then at that point, after this pause, v'nefesh Yonatan nikshra v'nefesh David, and the soul or the spirit of Yonatan became tied with the spirit of David, v'yaveh Yonatan kinafsho. And Yonatan loved him as his very own self. It's very, very strange why this happened, right? So one thing we could talk about is the fact that, after all, David is a great hero who's just saved Klal Yisrael. So there is some sort of explanation here. Also, if you take a look in Pasuk Nun Hey, let's go back to it, Nun Chet, actually, in the previous parak and parak Yud Zayin. V'yomer Lev Shaul ben Miata Anar, V'yomer David ben Avdecha Yishai Beit Halachmi. Now, reading this like I read it last time, this is a profession of loyalty, of clan loyalty or personal loyalty on the part of David. So here I have this great hero of Klal Yisrael, who has obviously been chosen by God to defeat the Plishti, and he professes loyalty to the house of Shaul. So immediately what happens after that is this loyalty is reciprocated in some way. And we read in Pasuk Aleph, "Vayikhalot the Lebel Shaul Nefesh v'Yonatan Nikshav Nefesh David v'Yaveh Yonatan Kinafsho." Now, as we read on through the Pesukim, there's another mention of Yonatan v'David. So, first in Pasuk Aleph, you have Avat Nefesh. Secondly, in Pasuk Gimel, take a look at Pasuk Gimel. "Vayichrot Yonatan v'David Brit ba'Avoto Oto Kinafsho." The second mention of the Avat HaNefesh and the Kritat Brit, right? That's second. Third, what Yaakov here pointed out was the dressing or the switching of clothes. Pasuk Dalet. V'etpashet Yonatan et mi'il asher alav v'yitnei l'David u'madav v'ad charbo v'ad kashto v'ad chagaro. So he gave him his clothes. So I guess that's also on some level a symbol of Kritat Brit. So you have Avat HaNefesh mentioned twice. You have the Kritat Brit. You have the transference of the clothes. And I kind of agree with Yaakov's question overall, what is the significance of this, right? It might be explicable in terms of the context that David is a hero and he's professed loyalty to the house of Shaul, but certainly the emphasis here in the Pesukim, it's interesting to think about what exactly is this emphasis on the Avat HaNefesh, the Kritat Brit, the transfer of the clothes. That's a good question. Good. I'm willing to discuss that. Judah, what do you want to say?
If you look at this Aleph through heads of paragraph block, it seems very unclear what the topic of the paragraph is. If you look at the first three, I would have assumed it's Avad, Yonatan, and David. Then Pasuk Bet is just stuck in there, and then Pasuk Hay is also just stuck in there. But if you look at it as something else, as a continuation of the story, well, then you come up with Yaakov's problem.
Okay,
so it's... Further, a continuation of Yaakov's problem is, what are Pasuk Bet and Hay doing?
Oh, that's a very good point. As a matter of fact, let's go back to the way I read it a moment ago. This is a very good point. Take a look at Pasuk Aleph. Vayhi kechalotol daber al Shaul, Shaul is gone. Shaul is finished. The story of David and Shaul is finished, right? And now we begin the story of, apparently, in some sense, Shaul v'Yonatan. And the focus is on Shaul v'Yonatan here. But this brings us back to the two mysterious psukim that Judah raised a moment ago, Pasuk Bet and Pasuk Hay, respectively. Take a look in Pasuk Bet. Vayikacheu Shaul b'yomahu v'lo netano lashuv beit aviv. So it's as if Shaul returns, right? Shaul, in not allowing David to return to the house of his father, has returned to the story, right? Why is Shaul mentioned in Pasuk Bet? Or take a look at Pasuk Hay. Vayitzi David b'chol asher yishalchenu Shaul, yaskil v'yasameu Shaul, al anshei milchama v'yita b'nei kol am v'gam b'nei avdei Shaul. So Shaul is mentioned three times in Pesukim Hay. It's actually, if you really thought about it, it probably is A, B, A, B, A, B. In other words, it's Shaul, Yonatan, Shaul, Yonatan, Shaul, Yonatan. If you followed it through, there's some sort of structure here. I didn't bother to do it. But if you think about it, it's obvious, because at the beginning is the mention of Shaul and David, the switch to Yonatan, the mention of Shaul and David again, the switch to Yonatan, and the mention of Shaul and David. So there's a kind of frame here of Shaul and David that surrounds the Yonatan and David material. It could work out, I'm pretty sure. But even though it wasn't clear, I think you all understand what I mean here. It's obvious. Yeah, Judah. So that's a really good point. So in other words, one question here, this is getting better. One question here was the issue of the focus on Avat HaNefesh of David and Yonatan, what's going on here in these five Pesukim. The second is this interesting back and forth between Yonatan and David on the one hand that seems to be at the center of things, and Shaul and David, which seems to be around or surrounding it on a certain structural plane. What's exactly that tension or that back and forth? So we have two interesting questions here. Okay. Yeah, Judah.
So I think one thing that popped out to me at the beginning was that Yonatan takes off his meil and gives it to David. Meil is often a beged malchut in Tanakh. So I think that could explain a couple of things here, or at least it seems to foreshadow Yonatan sort of giving malchut over to David.
Yeah, without a shadow of a doubt. After the double mention of the Avat Nefesh and the Kritat Brit, you get this very interesting, for lack of a better term, transfer or transference scene is the best way to phrase it. Maybe take a look at pasuk Dalet after the Kritat Brit. Vayitvashet Yonatan et mi'il asher alav v'yitneilu David umadav va'ad charbo va'ad kashto va'ad chagaro. Now, by the way, where in the past have we seen the madim, the uniform, which is the armor, and the cherev, and the dressing by a member of Beit Shaul of David, and with a kind of hidden reference to removal of clothing as well. Fascinating. Of course, in the previous parak, in Parak Yud Zayin, we all remember the scene. Go back and take a look at it again. In Parak Yud Zayin, Pasuk Lamed Chet, we have the following. Yud Zayin Lamed Chet says, Vayabesh Shaul et David Madav. So Shaul dressed David in his madim, his armor. V'natan kov v'necho shalo shol v'yabesh ato shiryon lametet v'yachagor David et charbo me'al amadav v'yol alechet ki lo nisa v'yom v'david ashalo chalech be'ele ki lo nisiti v'yasireim David me'elav. So it's kind of interesting, right? You have the dressing by a member of Beit Shaul of David with the madim and the cherev of melucha, right? And David takes it off. Right, David takes it off. So here, our story is the same, right? But different, right? It's the dressing of David with the madim and the cherev of the Beit Melucha of Shaul, but David does not take it off. who has taken it off? It was Yonatan that had taken it off. Pasuk Dalet. V'itpashet Yonatan at Mi'ila sharalav v'itnu leDavid. In other words, almost even though this isn't right, you can think of it going this way. It goes David. It goes Shaul gives it to David. David takes it off and gives it back. Right? Yonatan then gives it to David. No. It goes as following. Shaul, David, taking it off. Taking it off. Yonatan, David, right? Or something along those lines. But no, the structure's not perfect here, but the idea, I think, is relatively obvious, that these two scenes are somewhat opposites. They're the same and opposites of each other, that what had not happened beforehand now does happen, lo ayidei Shaul, but ayidei David, and I think Judah is right to read it as a hamlacha kind of scene, which I think is really interesting.
And the fact that when it says that he could call Shaul that bear, like when Shaul was sort of falling out of the scene, that's like kind of,
yeah, well, I think you're actually right here. That part of what's going on here in these psukim is that there's a kind of formal transfer of melucha to David, and it can't happen by Shaul. It has to happen by Yonatan. And that's part of like the explanation of all the focus on the love of Yonatan for David, because it's going to be Yonatan who's going to transfer the melucha to David in some sort of way. So therefore, the Ahava and the Kritatz Brit is the kind of build-up to all of that, which we have to get to. Okay, so good. That's a third question. In other words, one was the focus on the Ahava of David and Yonatan. The second was the balancing that relationship between David and Shaul here in the Pesukim, which we talked about a little bit. And the third is this interesting parallel to Perek Yud Zion and the dressing scene there. And we have to put this all together a little bit more. Yeah, Josh.
If what we said before is true, that Shaul might be trying to kind of prevent David from threatening the Melucha any more than he already has, it seems somewhat strange that he would just go ahead and keep him, like, and not just, he should just say, okay, here's your award, like, go home. Like, why is he keeping him in the palace and then like hiring him as the head of?
Okay, fourth question here: the psychological motivation of the three characters here in this little story. We've been reading this previously at the end of Perek Yud Zion that Shaul feels threatened by David, and therefore he kind of demanded to know who he is, where he's from, what he's all about, and this form of profession of loyalty, the oath scene that I talked about last time. So this raises the question of psychologically, what's going on here? What's the motivation of Shaul? What's the motivation of David? What's the motivation of Yonatan? Good. Another issue that needs to be dealt with. Mayor.
It's not as much a question as an idea. But I think
go ahead, talk.
The scene is very much like a transition scene between like the previous thing and the next thing that's about to happen. Because there's like a few things in it that link back. So the previous things are things that link back to the, like, for example, the getting the cloak was...
You have here things going back. You have reading backwards, correct? Going back to the garments previously, correct?
That's part of the setup here is to, and part of the reason maybe the bet is inserted where it is because Shaul, I don't think, is convinced by the end of the previous paragraph.
Okay.
And not letting him go back home seems to be evidence of the read that we tried to do at the end of the last paragraph, which is that he's afraid that except that at home there's possibly allegiances lie elsewhere.
That's a fascinating suggestion as an answer to Josh's question. Josh asked, what is Shaul's motivation in keeping David bebeit hamelech? So Meir's answer is, that prevents the rising or the formation of another center of power. It's about keeping the threats close, or you keep your enemies close. On some level. And I very much like that reading. I am going to certainly go in that direction, but hold off on it.
Maybe wise with the Yonatan thing, because it's the same idea. It's like a rebellion within the palace type thing. He's very suspicious.
Okay, so we have to work all this out, but good. Yeah, Yossi.
Can we possibly make a comparison to when Yonatan, I mean, David's experience against the Plishti, against Goliath, to Yonatan's victory earlier on?
We could have, but we didn't. I didn't do that. Just because I can't cover everything. But that would be, we would have done that a couple weeks ago already. Yeah, I think that there's this, and it's interesting comparison between the victory of Yonatan, whatever it was, Yud Gimel Yud Dalet, and the victory of David in Yud Zayin Yud Chet are related, Yud Zayin, in some interesting ways. They're similar characters. That might be what explains the Avat HaNefesh that bothered Yaakov, right? In other words, there are kind of here three ways to explain the Avat HaNefesh in response to Yaakov's question that I already raised here. Possibility one, it's just natural and normal because David is the hero and he's professed loyalty to the house of Shaul. That's possibility one. Possibility two, is what you just suggested now, Yossi. That there's some sort of common psychological or hero character dynamic that the two of them share because of the parallels of the battle against Goliath in Perek Yud Zion and the victory of Yonatan in Perek Yud Dalet, Yud Gimel Yud Dalet. And since they're similar characters, that's why, you know, they're these young, courageous men. That's why they strike up with each other. And that's also relatively explainable. Now, the third explanation, which I've already suggested here on some level, is the idea that it's part of the unfolding or the exposition of the story, that we need to have Yonatan transfer the melucha to David, part of that garment parallel we talked about previously. So as part of that, there's this buildup of the friendship as building up to that. It's really not so central to the story. It's really just about having Yonatan be the person who's going to make that grant to David on some plane, which needs to be explained a little bit more.
Yeah. In that last one, it doesn't happen like immediately right now. It's maybe you're saying
it begins now, but it happens over time. Now, why David can't take the melucha from Shaul, but he has to rather get it from Yonatan, I think is actually a very, very important dynamic in the next 10 prakim or so. But I think we already kind of see it beginning here on some planes. That's a good point. Yair, go ahead.
Just to support this point, Sukin, David finishes talking to Shaul, and it's still up in the air. He still could have gone home, and nothing would have really happened. Only then it switches back to what's going on with Yonatan and says that he loves him or whatever, and only then afterwards does Shaul make sure that he stays in his house, which shows that Shaul maybe needs Yonatan's approval, or it's really Yonatan who's making.
That's interesting. That's a different answer to the question of Josh's question of psychological motivation. Why Shaul keeps David at home? Okay, a lot of interesting points here. What I want to do is I'm gonna. Keeping all these questions in mind, I'm going to try to just read through the psukim. Let's just do a close reading and go verse by verse. It's only five psukim, so we have the luxury of time to do that today. Let's see what happens. Okay. I'll read from the beginning here, and we'll comment as we go along. Perek Yichat Pasuk Aleph. Vayikachalot ledaber el Shaul v'nefesh Yehonatan nikshara b'nefesh David v'yave Yonatan kinafsho. I think there's a striking opposition between the two halves of this pasuk. First half of the pasuk, Vayik Chalotel Daber El Shaul. Second half, V'nefesh Yonatan Nikshra B'nefesh David Ve'evel Yonatan Kinafsho. Now, as you know, we're learning the third parak of Gittin at night. You all remember the Sugya Mishpatei Tznayim and the Machlok between Rabbi Meir and, it's a Tanakhshe, I don't remember my Gemara. It's Rabbi Yosef Glili, I think, Rabbi Chananya, Michlal Lavata Shomehen, Michlal Lavata Lo Shomehen. So many Rishonim, of course, Michlal Lavata Shomehen. Of course. How could it not be? That Michlal Lavata Lo Shomehen. Of course. You know, it's if Yehonatan Vayehavau Yonatan kinafsho, that Yonatan loves him like his own spirit or his own soul. By implication, who doesn't love David like his own spirit or his own soul at this point? Shaul, right? It's tzoik from the structure of Pasuk Aleph. Now, it's not just tzoik from the structure of Pasuk Aleph. It's also tzoik from the last time Ahava and Ahava of David has been mentioned. Take a look in Perek Tet Zayin, Pasuk Kaf Aleph, before the story of the war against the Plishti, against Goliath. Tet Zayin Kaf Aleph says as following. Where is that? Why am I in Sefer Shoftim? That's not a good idea. Perek Tet Zayin, Pasuk Kaf Aleph says as follows. Vayavo David el Shaul, vayamo lefanav, and David came in front of Shaul, and he stood in front of him. Vayahaveu ma'od, he loved him very much. And he became his weapons bearer. So in other words, originally Shaul had loved David, it was Vayaveo, and here it's not. By implication, it's Yonatan who now loves David. Shaul is finished with David. He doesn't love him anymore. Meaning, whoever said this, I think, is 100% right. Despite the professions of loyalty by David and saying, I'm not a threat, when he says, Ani Ben Avdecha Yishai, it doesn't make a bit of difference. Shaul can no longer love David as he once did, and it's part of a contrast. This is the fourth answer to why the focus is on the love of Yonatan and David. It's in contrast to the non-existent love of any more between Shaul and David that once was. Okay, now we go on, reading along this lines. Pasuk bet. Vayikachehu Shaul b'yom ahu v'lo natzno lashuv beit aviv. Now Yish Drachman says the reason why Shaul keeps David in his palace at this point in time is because Shaul is weak, and out of Shaul's weakness he wants to make sure his son, the crown prince, is happy. And if this is his crown prince son's buddy, then he'll keep him in the palace. I don't think so. I think, like Meir, that it's part of the ihahava of David by Shaul theme, that he thinks of him as a threat, and therefore he's going to keep him close. Okay, and now we go on. Pasuk Gimel, reading this way. Vayichrot Yehonatan v'David Brit ba'avoto oto k'nafsho. Now I said, so this is kritat Brit between Beit Shaul and David. It's not really kritat Brit between Beit Shaul and David. It's kritat Brit between Yonatan and David. And who's conspicuously absent at this point in the psukim? This is one of the psukim of the toch, not the frame, that Shaul's absent from. Well, Shaul is absent from it. Because can Shaul have any sort of kritat brit between himself and David? Absolutely not, because he views him as the ultimate threat. And therefore the kritat brit, the same as the ava, is specifically on the axes of Shaul and Yonatan, and not on the axes of Shaul and David. Now we have Yonatan and David, Yonatan and David on the axis of Shaul and David. Now we go on. I'm just going to go on further. Pasuk Dalet. Vayitvashet Yonatan at me'ila sharalo vayitneilu David umadav va'ad charbo va'ad kashro va'ad chagaro. Now we have the parallel that we talked about previously. It's not just avan kritat brit, it's also symbolic hamlacha that Yonatan engages in. Now, if you think about this on the psychological plane, when Shaul sees that his son Yonatan has this kesher nafshi with David, when he sees that his son Yonatan has been kareid britito, and he sees that his son has symbolically been mamlichoto, what is Shaul's response at this point? Where is he at mentally or psychologically? I would assume he's pulling his hair out already at this point, right? Let's read on. Pasuk Chet. Vayitzei David b'chol ashe yishlachenu Shaul yaskil v'yisameinu Shaul al anshei ha-milchama. And so he went on all these missions, and Shaul put him on all the anshei milchama. Why did he put him on all the anshei milchama?
He had no choice,
or... or it's endangering, right? Oh, okay, well, have him in the palace. Let's put him in charge of the palace guard. Let's send him out on these missions. Who knows, maybe something will happen to him. And then finally, Pasuk Hey, Vayitav Be'inei Kala'am V'gam Be'inei Avdei Shaul. And who's missing from Pasuk Hey? And who else? Shaul. It found favor in the eyes of all the Am, and of course you don't find favor in the eyes of Yonatan. But who's missing? By that insertion of the word Avdei in the last Shaul Pasuk of the five Pasukim, it tells you that it's Dafka, the whole situation, finds favor in the eyes of Avdei Shaul, but not in the eyes of Shaul. Okay, so I think that's a nice way to read it that accounts for a lot of the things that we mentioned here. And I want to point out here that there are really two meta-interpretations, or two meta-ways of reading these five psukim, which I will suggest and kind of summarize points you made already. One way to read this is on the psychological plane, in terms of the psychology of the three characters. And let's do that for the moment. Two characters here are very, very clear. Yonatan is naive. Yonatan is trusting. Yonatan is friendly. Yonatan is koreit brit, avat nefesh for David, and that's Yonatan. He's pretty clear in terms of who and what he is. Shaul, well, I think Shaul is suspicious. Shaul is concerned, and his concern might already begin to be bordering on the paranoid. What about David? Where does David stand in all of this? He's actually almost not a character here in these five psukim, right? So he stood in front of the king and he professed loyalty to the king and said, I am the ben avdecha Yishai. And then he goes along with this relationship with Yonatan. He's koreit brit. He takes the armor. He doesn't take it off. And what does he know in the back of his mind all along? He knows exactly what this all means, because he knows that Shmuel was already mamlich oto kamela. So you can read David's silence here, or David's absence here, as a symbol of his savvy. He stands in front of the king, he's Koreit Brit, he sets himself up in the palace, he charms Yonatan with whatever natural charm he has, he gets the armor, he's in charge of the palace guard, and everything is going just great, and he's already effectively becoming the king, the way the plan is supposed to work out. So you can read David as highly savvy here. And there is a way to think about that in all these prokem that we're going to get to. That Shaul is always suspicious and paranoid, and Yonatan is always trusting, naive, and loving, and David is always savvy. He is Navon Davar, as he was described back in Perek Tet Zayin. That's one way to read this, right? However, I'm not so sure that's correct, because we don't really have any evidence for it. Another way to read it is that David is not so much savvy, but he simply put, he's tamim. Throughout his career, David does nothing ever to undermine or overturn the malchut of Shaul v'Yonatan. He is never active in seizing the malchut, despite everything he knows. He's always actually passive and just receives the malchut from Yonatan rather than Shaul. So in fact, you could say that David here is the opposite of savvy. He's tamim on some plane. And simply these things kind of happen to him, which is why he's missing from the text here. So you can interpret the missingness of David from these five psukim in one of two directions, either as a symbol of savviness and Navon Davar, or as a kind of symbol of tzmimot, which is another way to think of David at this point in his career. And that's something I can't resolve. Different people think different things. I can only suggest both opinions at this point. Yeah, Joe.
I say that relates to a discussion we had, I think, quite a few weeks ago about whether it's about David's political intrigue and his sensibilities with these guys, whether it's
Well, we see hints here and there. On the one hand, at this point, he's tamim and he's dogel b'shem Hashem. On the other hand, he's always navon davar. He's always got a plan, right? And it's no accident that the David character stands in parallel to the Yosef character that we talked about, because those two kinds of things, the everything is from God on the one hand, and this is incredible trust in Hashem. On the other hand, this you always have a way to work things out, kind of right. They go together in both stories in some way. We talked about that in the past as well. Now, I want to move to a different axis of analyzing this. In other words, not so much think of it as the psychological axis, but maybe think of it as the dramatic or the theological axis. And let me explain what I mean by this. In other words, here you have this story where Shaul has been told that he's lost the malchut. Right? He's been told that already. He's told it's been given to his better. Right? He has seen this young man defeat the Plishti champion after 40 days of Chilul Hashem. He is suspicious that this is the person that is going to take over. He demands that a oath of fealty is sworn, right? And he does everything he can. And he tries, okay, so I'll keep him in the palace to make sure nothing happens, right? But under his own very nose, his own son goes and is Koreit Brit out of Ava for this very person who's the enemy and gives him the begadim that are the symbol of Malchut. It's almost as if Shaul tries everything to avoid a certain scenario, and yet nevertheless, ironically, exactly the opposite of what he attempts to achieve happens to him, or happens anyway, and by what instrument? The virtue of his own child. Okay, now this is an example of irony. In other words, where everything is attempts to go in one direction, and yet God drives it back in the other direction no matter what. Now, there's a wonderful thematic parallel here to the story of Paro, Bat Paro, and Moshe at the very, very beginning of Sefer Shemot. In that story, Paro wants to throw all of the Jewish males into the river. Why does he want to do that? Well, you know the famous Midrash, it's because he knows that the Goel of Am Yisrael will eventually meet his fate by water. So he says, well, let me do it now, preemptively. I don't want there to be a Goel. I'm going to make sure that all the Jewish babies go in the water, right? And his very own daughter is standing there in the water with her Goel, with the Goel in her hands. And what could she do? She could dunk him in the water and kill him if she actually listened to her father's command of Kol HaBen HaYoreh Tashlichu. Instead, she takes him out, Minamaya Mishitihu, that's what his name means, I drew him from the water. He's drawn from the water and raised in Paro's own house. as his Ki'ilu son, the one who's eventually going to lead to the complete downfall of all of Paro's edifice and structure. So it's exactly the same thing here thematically, right? In other words, that Shaul wants as much as possible that David should not be the next Melech, and by virtue of his own child in his own house, this person is given the hamlacha, is given the clothes, etc., etc. This is all on the thematic plane. There are no literary parallels here, but the idea of the best laid plans of man are reversed by God's will, ironically, and that the king's own child betrays him to eventually lead to the unfolding of the divine plan is another way to read these five psukim, so much not on the psychological plane, but more on the dramatic, theological plane. And this is a story about divine providence, these five psukim, in the sense that I just kind of outlined. Okay. Oh. All right. Any comments or questions? Oh, by the way, it's not just Shaul's son who gives him away. Who else gives him away later on? Michal bat Shaul, right, who's totally attached to David as well, which is the next story after this that we'll get to. Okay. Yeah, yes?
I was trying to make a point, though, you mentioned about Yonatan being naive. Later on, when Yonatan is actually dealing with David about, like, sort of like trying to save him and all that kind of situation, it doesn't seem like he's naive. It seems like he's actually purposely helping David overturn Shaul's mahler.
I don't know. We talk about that later. I think at this point, when you talk about the Avat HaNefesh, you know, it almost like as Yaakov pointed out.
It seems like he wants Shaul to be.
I think that's that, and that's a little.
The guy to do it because he's.
So I don't think there's evidence for that at this point. Maybe later on, but I don't think so. And why would Yonatan have any interest in giving up the Malchut? I mean, we know him from the past. Why? We know him from the past as this courageous, strong fellow.
And he didn't want to.
Again, there's no reason to think at this point that Yonatan is interested in David becoming the Melech. I think it's more, it's kind of naive, ironic, b'tzmimut, so to speak, as opposed to any kind of... I don't think he thinks that, oh, I'm making him Melech when he gives him the armor. He's giving him the armor because he's his buddy, and he loves him, and he likes him. And I don't think it's supposed to be read as more than that. I don't think it's supposed to be read as more than that at this point. Okay, let's go on. All right, next segment. Let's read further. Perak Yud Chet, Pasuk Aleph, through Tetvav. We should have enough time to cover this, hopefully. Take a look at it. Yud Chet Aleph through Tetvav. And we have some obvious problems we have to deal with, but go ahead and see what we have to say. Yud Chet Vav through Tetvav, I'm sorry. Yud Chet Vav through Tetvav. From where up to through Pasuk Tetvav. That's what a good cup sent every to finish. I said, guys, through Tetvav.
Through Tetvav or
Tet Zion? Through Tetvav. Tet Zion is... Oh, Tet Zion you can read also, yeah. Because Yud Zion is already the marriage. To say. Yeah, Judah, what do you have to say?
Where does Shaul find out that David has the melucha?
That David what?
Has the melucha. He says in Pasuk Chet,
Behold, Yeah, meaning that, well, that's certainly reflective of what he thinks is going to happen, right? Pasuk 7, Vayichal l'Shaul ma'od, when he heard these women, Vayirah b'einav, was bad in his eyes, at davar hazeh, Vayomer, natnu l'David revavot, they gave him thousands, or millions, or tens of thousands, whatever it is, V'li natnu alafim, they only mentioned to me thousands, V'od lo acham lucha, furthermore, they're even going to give him like the kingship, meaning it's like it's reflective of his worst hidden fears. He's just voicing his concern in this pasuk.
Okay, when I first read it, it seemed like he had this knowledge of it.
No, I don't think he gave it. I think it's just more of a voicing of his fears. And that's why it says in pasuk tet, Vayi Shaul Ovein et David Me'yom Ahu Va'ala. So he was his enemy from that point in time and on. Okay. Anyone else? Yeah, Yassi. Yeah, prophesizing in a kind of miserable fashion, though. Nothing particularly pleasant, obviously.
Right. It just seems really a weird thing. Then also another thing is later on in that parashia, in the end, he goes, "Vayira Shaul mifnei David," like he's fearing David, whatever. And then he goes and makes him an officer, like over a thousand. So like it just seems like a weird thing to do if he fears him. He's putting him as his, like right after saying that he fears him, he's going and putting him as one of his top guys.
Yeah, take a look at Pasuk Yud Bet. Shaul sar. So he feared David because God was with David, and he removed himself from Shaul. Pasuk Yud Gimel. Vayisireu Shaul meimo. This kind of interesting play on words here of removal. Vayisimeu lo sar elef. He made him an officer of thousands. Vayitiv yavol lefnei ha'am. This is strange because we've seen this vayisimeu lo beforehand. Take a look in Pasuk Hey. Almost it's repetitive. Is it repetitive? Is it the same? Is it different? That's certainly one interesting question in terms of that. I agree. Okay. Any other comments? Yeah, Avi.
Interesting how we see a recurrence of the Ruach Ra'ah, and the whole point last time was that David was invited as the Minagain to cure the Ruach Ra'ah, but here apparently didn't work.
Yeah, okay, this interesting that you have here, listen, if you divide it up into parts here, so there are two or three parts, let's say there are three parts. Part two certainly begins in Pasuk Yud, Vayhi Mimacharat. Let's take a look at it, okay, carefully. Vayhi Mimacharat, first question, Macharat of what? And Macharat can mean one of two things. It can mean the very next day, or it can mean sometime later, right? Vayhi Mimacharat, like in the Yitro story, right? Vayhi Mimacharat. It can mean the next day, it can mean much later on. Vatislach ruach elokim ra'al Shaul, and there was a ruach ra'an Shaul v'yitnabe b'toch habayit. V'yitnabe doesn't necessarily mean prophesy in terms of speaking atidot. It refers to a trance-like state, sometimes which the person can fall down, sometimes they can stand up, sometimes it can be a frenzy, sometimes they can mutter, sometimes they can speak in tongues, sometimes they can say nothing of any intelligence, sometimes it could be like speaking in your talking in your sleep. It's actually a general term for trance-like states which can be prophetic, which aren't necessarily prophetic. So the different day in Chazal, whether he's actually minabeh something. There's one day in Chazal that he's minabeh that David is going to be the king, right? That's why he gets really upset, takes the chanin and tries to kill the guy that he was just minabeh is going to be the king. V'David minagin b'yado kiyom b'yom, like every day, v'chanit b'yad Shaul. And the chanit was in the hand, the spear was in the hand of Shaul. V'yatel Shaul et hachanit. It's hachanit, it's the definite article, which is kind of interesting. So some of the parshanim point out that hachanit is the symbol of the melucha. But you know what? Who previously had a chanit in their hand and tried to kill David?
Yeah.
Oh yeah, exactly. The plishti in the previous parak had a chanit in his hand and tried to kill David. So here we have Shaul, who has a chanit in his hand and tries to kill David. And we're going to come back to that a little bit later, okay? Vayatel Shaul et hachanit, vayomer akeb David uvakir. I'm going to send it right through him into the wall. Vayisov David mipanav pamayim. David twisted out of the way. You know, David is very agile, right? He's quick, he's fast. So he managed to twist out of the way of the giant lumbering after him with the spear in his hand, right? So the imagery is obviously connects to the Goliath story on some level. Okay. I like Avi's point of Ruach Ra. Go back to the language of Perek Tet Zion, the Ruach Ra story, at the very end there of Perek Tet Zion. Take a look in Perek Tet Zion, pasuk Yod Gimel, for example. Tetzayin pasuk Yod Gimel says as follows: Vatitzlach ruach Hashem al David me'ayom ahu umala vayakam Shmuel ve'elech haramata. Ruach Hashem Sara mi'im Shaul uviatata ruach ra me'et Hashem. So you have this idea of ruach Hashem on David and the ruach Hashem being removed from Shaul and being replaced by ruach ra. But when you have the problem of the ruach ra, we know what the solution is. The solution is going to be the minagain, who's going to be David. Take a look at pasuk kaf gimel there. Vayabayot ruach Elokim al Shaul v'lakach David et hakinor v'nigain biyado. It's ruach Elokim ra'al Shaul. David takes the kinor and nagain biyado. V'ravach l'Shaul v'tov lo v'sara me'alav ruach hara'ah. Now, the language there is that when you have the problem of the ruach ra, David takes the kinor biyado. You have the same exact thing here in perek yud chet. Okay, take a look in pasuk yud. Vayihimi machraf v'tislach ruach l'kim ra'al shol v'yidnabe b'toch habayit v'david minagen biyado kiyom biyom v'chanit. You know, it's the same thing. It's the same story, right? It was removed from Shaul. Now, here's the interesting thing. Why is this story here? Why is this story here? You know, it's really kind of strange. You could even kind of imagine that Pasuk Yud, Vahimi Macharat, that could be Macharat of what? That could be Macharat of Tetzayin Kaf Gimel, theoretically, right? All the same imagery of the Ruach Ra being, of Ruach Hashem leaving Shaul and moving over, leaving Ruach Hashem being upon David and the Ruach Ra coming upon Shaul and the David Minagain B'Kinor B'Yado. You could imagine that story of Tetzayin Kaf Gimel jumps to Yud Chet Yud Vahim Macharat, and the story would kind of flow pretty nicely, actually, on some plane, right? It would work out pretty well. So suddenly it's here. It's kind of strange in a certain way. So Avi's point is, what's the point of the parallel between the Ruach Ra story here and the Ruach Ra story in Perek Tetzayin? I agree. And I'll add to Avi's point, there's something very interesting here. Take a look in the way the story here in Yudchet ends. Yud Gimel says, Vayesireu Shaul me'imo, Vayesimelo Sarel. He removes... Shaul removes David. What's supposed to happen at the end of a Ruach Ra story? Take a look in Tetzayin Kaf Gimel again. Take a look at the way it ends. Vayabayot Ruach Elokim al Shaul v'lakach David et hakinor v'nigain biyadov Ruach l'Shaul v'tov lo v'ravach l'Shaul v'tov lo v'sara me'alav Ruach Ra. The way it's supposed to end is that David's minagain causes the hasara, the sara of the Ruach Ra from Shaul, and everything ends well. But how does it end here? The way it ends here is Vayisireu Shaul Me'umo. The Sara is not the removal of the Ruach Ra from Shaul, but it's rather the removal of David from Shaul's presence. Okay, so that's an interesting point. I think Avi said that as well. I think that's really interesting. So this question of what to do with about this parallel and the difference of the Sara versus the Sara in the two stories is really interesting. Okay, yeah, what else? Judah.
It seems unclear based on both passages whether the Zayin or Yud Chet in both cases what the Ruach is. Is it a Ruach Elokim or is it a Ruach Ra? And perhaps that could connect to what the Ruach is supposed to do. If it's Ruach Elokim, it might have a positive purpose, possibly. However, if it's a Ruach Ra, it's clearly objectively bad.
What about Ruach Elokim Ra?
Here it's a Ruach Elokim Ra, and in the other case it was a Ruach Elokim and then a Ruach Ra.
And it was a Ruach Ra there also.
But there it's separated.
I don't know. I think it's probably the idea is that it comes from God and it's a ruach ra. That it's not just depression, you know, being disturbed. It's supposed to be, so it serves some sort of divine purpose. Yeah, Yaakov.
I think maybe the answer to what we brought up with Avi's question is that maybe this is like a completion or a completion in some sense of the term. Of the relationship between David and Shaul that started in Perek Tetzayin, because in Perek Tetzayin, Hashem, the Ruach Elokim is now on David, and Shaul doesn't realize that he has a Ruach Ra, and Hashem is no longer with him. There's no realization by Shaul over there, but at this point he realizes that that I guess for whatever reason once he can't kill David, he's in Pazuki Bedrooms by Yara, and he realizes that Hashem is with him, and it's and the spirit of Hashem is gone from him. And possibly both the spirit that Ruach Ra is gone and the general Ruach Elohim that was, you know, carrying him along is gone.
Okay, good point. Yeah, here.
Something we heard, I think, in the beginning, Shaul complains that he only has Alephim and David has Rivavot, I think a lot more. Then he has his Ruach Ra, so he's jealous of him. Then he has his Ruach Ra, then he doesn't know anything about it, but then he has a Ruach Ra, which seems to cause him to try to assassinate him. Right? Then he gets afraid, which is why I assume he doesn't try to, meaning if he wanted to kill him, why couldn't he get more people to kill him if he really wanted to kill him, right? If there's a revolution, you kill the guy, okay?
Mm-hmm.
But then he gets afraid, so therefore he doesn't try to kill him anymore. But what does he do instead? Instead, he doesn't try to kill him. He just tries to lessen his power by giving him Aleph, which is what he was upset about, that he was the one with Aleph, instead of the Luther vote. So he just downgrades him instead of trying to kill him.
Okay, good. I want to raise one more problem. And then I want to suggest two possible interpretations. The problem when I look at these 10 psukim, what I see here as very central is a problematic issue of chronology. There's a double problem of chronology here. Let me explain what I mean. The first problem of chronology is in the very first pasuk vav. Let's read pasuk vav. Vayi bevo'am v'shuv David me'akot et ha-plishti v'teitzena ha-nashim mikol erei Yisrael l'ashur v'machalot l'krach. Wait, it was when they came, Beshuv David Me'akot et ha-plishti. And you should realize we've seen that phrase, Beshuv David Me'akot et ha-plishti, beforehand. Take a look in Pasuk Nun Zayin, Perek Yud Zayin, Pasuk Nun Zayin. Ukeshuv David Me'akot et ha-plishti, ve'ikach oto avner, ve'yevei lefnei Shaul, v'rosh ha-plishti v'yado. So when he came back, he came in front of Shaul for the profession of loyalty with the head of the plishti in his hand. So when does this little story of the singing women happen? Does it happen before the beginning of Perek Yudchet? Does it happen here? I mean, it's unclear as to when it happens. Maybe it already happened actually 5 or 6 psukim back before, and it's kind of explaining why Shaul is so suspicious of David, right? Because he'd heard the women singing what they were singing, right? Or maybe it happens here in Kushuv David Me'akot. It's just a kind of general formula that repeats itself. And the idea is that there's this deterioration. If beforehand, and I like this latter approach actually, if beforehand Shaul was only mildly suspicious of David, now he's heard the women singing and I think he's highly suspicious of David. Now, that's one problem of chronology. The second problem of chronology, Pasuk Yud, Vahibi Macharat. It was the next morning. What does that mean it was the next morning? Well, we're back in Partet Zion. Is it a continuation of Partet Zion? Is it the morning after the singing women? Is it the morning after after the treaty with Yonatan? Vahimi Macharat is just sometime later? In other words, I don't really know. But what it seems to is that these psukim are out to demonstrate a kind of general deterioration in the relationship between Shaul and David, that it only keeps going in one direction. It goes further and further downhill, and it eventually culminates in this assassination attempt, etc. And most Rishonim read exactly like Yair, going back to the first point raised. Take a look in Pasuk Yud Gimel. Vayasireu Shaul meimo vayisameilo sar elef vayitzevo vayavo lefnei ha'am. Well, hadn't he made him an officer before? Didn't he make him an officer back in Perek Yud Chet? Pasuk Hey vayitzei David b'chol yishochenu Shaul yaskil vayisameilo Shaul al anshei melchama. So there's a claim out there that he actually downgrades his status. Beforehand, he was the commander of Sayeret Matkal, of the palace guard. That was the Anshei Milchama. And now he just has a certain detail that he sent out away from the palace. It's like there's a deterioration and a further change in status, and that's the Vayisireyu, and he removes him. As opposed to the Ruach Ra being removed, he now removes David. And this is kind of one way to read these psukim, as a kind of general deterioration. I would like to suggest that there's another way to read these psukim, not as a general deterioration, but almost think of it as a kind of shtei bechinot type of approach, or two aspects type of approach, and let me kind of explain what I mean by this. And I'd like to go back to the previous point I made in the first half of the shiur, to Perek Tzayin a little bit, and to try to analyze the character of Shaul on two planes. Let me kind of explain what I mean by this. Take a look in Perek Yud Chet Pasuk Gimel again. Ve'ichrot Yehonatan V'David brit ba'avato oto b'nafsho. So there's ahava between David and Yonatan, between Yonatan and David. And as we read this, there is no ahava between Shaul and David. That is gone. It's been replaced by suspicion, paranoia, etc. But you know, is it really, really possible that the ahava is gone between Shaul and David? Go back to Perek Tet Zayin. Let's read the Ruach Ra story again in Perek Tet Zayin somewhat more carefully, right? Take a look in Perek Tet Zayin, Pasuk Kaf Aleph. Vayavo David al Shaul vayamod lefanav vayaveu ma'od vayi lo nosei chelim. He loved him, and he became his nosei kelim. Vayishlak Shaul yishai lemor yamod na David lefanai ki matzachen beinai. Vayabayot ruach alokim al Shaul v'lakach David etakina v'nigein biyadav ruach Shaul v'ravach l'Shaul v'tov lo v'sarami alav ruach ra'a. Shaul had once deeply cared for David, right? He was his nar, he was his nosei kelim, he loved him, he took him under his wing, he kept him in the palace, he was the one who would be menagein on the kinar and the ruach ra would go. So is it possible that just because of a certain kind of political issue or a fear for his house that all that ahava is gone? I would argue no. In other words, perhaps Shaul qua melech, as king, as political leader, is astoundingly suspicious of David and thinks that David is a threat, and that's the whole story that we have here at the beginning of Perek Yudchet. But there must still subsist something of that other bechina, the yachas ha'ishi, the personal relationship of Shaul and David that had once existed, where David was the nar and Shaul cared for him and he found favor in his eyes and he loved him and he was minagein bekinar and da da da. And where did all that go? And that question of where is the axes or the bechina of the personal relationship between David and Shaul, where has that gone to? That is unanswered. And that is answered here in this story of Perek Yudchet Pasuk Yud through Yud Gimel. Vahini macharat. So it's not the next day of the story in Perek Tet Zayin, but it is the continuation of the bechina of the story of Perek Tet Zayin, that issue of the personal relationship where David had b'menagein b'kinar and he found favor in Shaul's eyes. That's gone. That ends too. And that ends because of the Ruach Ra me'elokim. That ends that as well. And that's why we end with v'yisireu Shaul me'imo v'yisimilo sarala v'yitzevil v'nei am. And instead of the Ruach Ra being sar, it's David who's removed from Shaul's presence. And that aspect of the relationship ends. So in other words, if the middle of Perek of Yudzayin Yudchet and the beginning of Perek Yudchet tell the story of the disruption between Shaul and David because of the political threat, then here in Yudchet continues the story of Tet Zayin, the disruption between Shaul and David on the personal plane, et cetera. Now, the way it comes together is the two stories merge because through this interesting literary parallel. What's Biyad David? The Kinor, right? What was Biyad David in Perek Yud Zayin? The rocks, relatively harmless, right? What's Biyad Shaul here? The Chanit, right? Who had a Chanit in their hands in Perek Yud Zayin? Goliath. In other words, the Shaul is here depicted as Kain Goliath. He tries to kill David. Who had tried to kill David previously, and David with his agility managed to avoid that? The Ari and the Dove. So Shaul here is like doubly depicted as the Plishti with the Chanit in his hand, the Ari, the Dove, the big threatening lumbering creature who can't catch David, who's nimble. I just received should I tell you about my birthday card that I just got? Because I said the words nimble. I received this birthday card from someone. I have 2 minutes for this. It was a very funny birthday card. It said as follows: Jack be nimble, Jack be quick, Jack, jump over your candlesticks, and then the number of candlesticks for my current birthday. And then it said, Jack be in the Mother Goose Hospital burn unit, because you can't possibly jump over that number of candlesticks. Happy birthday. It was quite funny, I thought, yeah. But I was thinking of nimble, because David is nimble. It's a funny birthday card, right? All right. So anyway, Four days ago. Sunday was my lousy birthday. Stop. Okay. So now the point being is that that wasn't the point I wanted to make. I wanted to go with David being nimble, but I had this association with it. That was a funny. Anyway, so the point being is that Shaul is depicted here as the Ari, the Dov, the Plishti, which merges the Prokim. And one last thing Shaul is depicted as this will list. Pasuk Yud Dalet and Tetvav. Vayar Shaul Asher Maskil Ma'od. Vayagar Mipanav. Vayar Vayagar Bamidbar. Perek Kaf Bet. Take a look. Begins with the following: Vayar Balak ben Tziporat Kol Asher Asa Yisrael Amru Vayagar Moav Mipnei Am Ma'od. Okay, so Vayar Vayagar is Balak, Bilam, Midian, Moav, etc., the enemies of Klal Yisrael. So the psukim here really demonstrate the deterioration, and they portray Shaul as the Plishti, as the Ari, as the Dov, as Moav, as Midian, etc., etc. We'll continue with the Maris story next time.